As long as you and I are here, put it there. Long as you and I are here, put it there. If there's a fight, I'd like to fix it. I hate to see things go so wrong. The darkest night and all its mixed emotions is getting lighter, sing along. Put it there, if it weighs a ton. That's what a father said to his young son. I don't care if it weighs a ton. As long as you and I are here, put it there. Long as you and I are here, put it there.
Did anybody other than Jim McCartney Sr. ever use that phrase in English?
It's not one that I'm familiar with.
Put it there for
ways. That doesn't mean that no one did. It's just certainly not in my era. I don't recall.
Okay, because I think it was a Maka-ism within his house, and maybe not beyond that.
Right, that's the way I took it always.
Yeah, I just wondered if so. He was kind of coining a phrase. Yeah, such as it is, it's so McCartney.
It is.
Isn't it something like you hear, you know, if you didn't know the backstory, it would be something that could have originated with Paul.
Right, yeah.
Because he was the king of corn.
Well, yeah, it's a bit twee, but it's I like it. I do like this.
I'm not talking about the song. I'm talking about the phrase. But the song, I love the song.
Right.
You know what? I always, even I think before I knew it was, you know, he says, that's what a father said to his young son. And it could have been something he just pulled out of the air. I didn't necessarily know at the time I was first hearing the song that it was something his dad said to him.
Yeah.
Until there was like a Showtime special called Put It There that explained all that stuff.
Now, I think I knew because I interviewed Hamish Stewart and Robbie McIntosh.
Oh, he explained it to you?
Well, I think I got the press kit. And, oh. You know, so they... So I knew.
It sounds like what his directive would have been when he entered Paul's band. Hamish, put it there.
Oh.
Now put that there.
Yeah.
Taking over for Denny. Heavy lifting. But seriously, I felt a poignancy to the song even before I knew the backstory. There's a sweetness to it.
And, yeah.
You know, when he's able to channel that, you really feel it. You can almost get that it means something to him, which I think is he's never better than when he's singing something that absolutely has a connection to his emotional inner life.
It doesn't have raw emotion, though, in it. Still typically Paul.
Well, but there's typically Paul where he's, you know, singing Hallmark stuff. I don't get that from this song.
But it doesn't go as deep as I would like it. I mean, I don't expect it to become a sort of psychological
insight. No,
it's
not going to be here today.
Right.
But it is
his dad.
It's understated, though. I think that's just enough.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to lay down too thick and then it becomes something else. You know, being an artist, and this has been his greatest weakness, in my opinion, is knowing when to stop.
Well,
he knows. And
that,
in that case, I think he nailed it.
What do you mean, like back in 1970?
No, we're not talking about that, although you feel free to make your case in the show, mister, which is compiling McCartney.
It is. It's compiling McCartney.
As we are on the eve of the reissue of one of my favorite Paul albums, Flowers in the Dirt, although I have to say the advance notice is a bit disappointing to me because a lot of the stuff you wanted to see with it is going to be digital only and not part of the package, which kind of sucks. But I think there's online petitions for what they're worth that are trying to pressure things the other way. Nonetheless, that is a rare song post-1970 that we both like.
I know. Do you like Wanderlust?
I like it all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do you like this one?
I love this one.
Oh, there you go. So we got a few in common that we like.
Yeah. I mean, you probably don't like Flowers in the Dirt as much as I do.
It's an okay album.
As a return to form.
It was a return to form. I'd agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
followed by a real letdown for me.
It was definitely an echo. It was not as strong as what preceded it. And I know you've made the case for the Pattern Remix, a great album, then a lesser one, then a shit one, and then whatever. The 80s were a pretty harrowing period for Paul, as far as I'm concerned.
And for his fans.
Well, you know, they were buying the stuff, but you know what? People always point to Tug of War as like this great high point, you know, his greatest album since Band on the Run. You know, the same way Some Girls was like, you know, the highest Rolling Stones achievement since Exile or something like that. It, to me, I thought it was about half a great album.
Listen, you didn't have to sit at the press playing of Off the Ground.
There was a press to play.
Yeah,
where
we got Richard Ogden, his manager, and Jeff Baker, the publicist, and we're, you know, the press are duly informed that this is Paul's finest work since the White Album. So we've even bypassed Abbey Road.
That's pretty stratospheric.
Yes.
Well, is he still working for him?
No. Okay. No, they're all gone.
Sounds like the same guy that was praising your memorabilia book.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, my latest masterpiece.
Yeah. So we didn't really give a lot of time in our year-end roundup show of the Pure McCartney release that came during the year.
Oh, I think we gave it much more.
Yeah, more time than we would have preferred, I'm sure. But seriously, a guy who's had a career this long is still recording, still touring, was, you know, in my estimate, twice as prolific as he needed to be. Nonetheless, and if the Beatles and the ex-Beatles weren't tied to Universal Music Group, who's done such a terrible job in preserving their legacy... I think,
well, because the Beatles aren't doing a particularly good job.
Wherever you want to lay the blame. I'm just saying, I think if they were signed to Sony or almost any other label out there, there would be a lot more care, thought, and respect given to the repackaging and presentation of their catalog releases, you know, both the reissues and the compilations. And it is just... it is entirely consistent with every ex-Beatle. I think every single compilation that's been done has fallen way short of the mark.
Mm-hmm.
Every damn one of them.
Yeah,
and it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
this is the Beatles. They should be leading the way, and instead, you know, they're the negative example compared to what everybody else is doing.
It's basically kind of arrogance and laziness, isn't it?
It smacks to complete disinterest. It's like, why aren't they getting hands-on involved in their own?
Because they think it would just sell itself.
I suppose so, but you know what? How many releases does it take in a row to prove that is not the case?
Oh. Hey.
They're not paying attention.
That line of thinking hasn't worked on Paul these last 40 years.
What's that?
Well, you know, how long does it take before you realize it doesn't work?
Well, he had that rude awakening when he was signed to Columbia back, which is ironic because they're the ones that are handling things so well now, but when they worked for, or he worked for them, it wasn't working too well.
Yeah, but in which direction was the rude awakening? Wasn't it one for them as well?
Oh, buyer's remorse, I'm certain. But, you know, EMI wanted him back, and that's where he ended up. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not going to argue the merits of his catalog once he signed back with Capitol, because I think, you know, it was like anything else, any other period of his post-Beatles career. It was fair to middling to great occasionally. You know, that's the story of Paul. Yeah. Nonetheless, I think that one could make the case, you could put together a multi-disc set of all his best stuff, released and unreleased, B-sides. He's got, God knows, tons of material that you really could pick the A stuff. I know that you would not agree that he's got enough A material to fill a multi-disc box set.
I truly don't think so. And that's not me just making, you know, a cheap dig at him.
Oh, it is.
My opinion,
it is in parts.
No, not at all. Yes. No, the cheap dig is the EP that we should issue an EP of greatest hits. But in all seriousness, I would... certainly not go beyond two discs.
See, but you are maintaining this criteria that anything post-Beatles has to be on a Beatle level.
It would be an EP.
No, seriously. Come on.
No, but I'm serious.
That would be insanity.
There's no way it would be a double album by Paul of Beatles standard material, if that's what I was looking for.
Paul McCartney standard
material. Yeah, but no, so that's what I'm saying. I'm not looking for it to match Beatles. I'm just saying quality stuff that... adds to his legacy.
Yes.
So that if it's an album, if it's the album that is played by people in 100 years' time listening to a compilation of Paul's solo career, in my eyes, it does, and in my ears, it does him credit. That's what I'm looking for.
And I think you can
be Beatles standard.
Well, sure, but I think you can easily, if he's recorded between 400 and 500 songs, you could easily pull 100 that would stand up.
Well, one would think so, but I don't believe that that's the case.
I think
you know, you
wrong.
Would hope that would be the hit rate.
Oh, yeah.
But I
would be willing to make that case, but luckily for us, I don't need to, because someone already has. I'm speaking, of course, of friend of the show.
Tom Frangione.
Yes. You know him from The Fest. You know him from Beatle Fan Magazine. You know him, you love him. Till It Hurts. Besides being a highly knowledgeable Beatle authority, he is also one who got a lot of attention last year when Pierre McCartney came out, and he penned his own response compilation. He collated.
I think he got more interest in the album.
He got a lot of discussion going, that's for sure. Not everybody agreed with him, but I thought it was a lot more thoughtful than we actually were given.
Mm. Well, we'll discuss that with him in a minute. I mean, I have my issues with his own track selection.
You just have issues. Why don't you just cover the subject?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to air all my issues on this episode.
Yes. So Tom put together this five-disc set of 100 tracks, a nice, clean, even number that you can easily, you know, come up with, I say.
Yeah, you can. I can.
Of 100 great McCartney songs to really convey the scope of the McCartney experience post-Beatles to anybody who wants to have everything they need to have without buying individual albums, although there are going to be people out there I'm sure going to pick up Tug of War, Band on the Run, whatever. But really, this was produced by Tom. We have a link on our site for anybody who wants to see it so we don't have to read through 100 songs. And it was his response to the Pure McCartney set that came out in the spring last year. And why don't you explain to the listeners your thought process, how this whole thing came about, Tom?
Sure. You know, I'm a big McCartney fan going way, way, way back, probably, as the song says, before your mother was born for some of you out there. And when I heard that there would be a four-disc McCartney retrospective, the immediate thought that came into my head was what Stella had on her shirt when Paul got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yes.
It's about an adjective time. And I said, okay, let's see what did they do? Because Paul has been anthologized to that point, essentially three times, in 1978 with Wings Greatest, and in 1987 with All the Best, and in 2001 with Wingspan. And each one had its strengths and its weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And I think to look at Pure McCartney, before you do that, you really have to put it into context. Now, okay, I'm gonna come clean here. I'm an accountant by trade. And I said, wow, the deluxe one's going to have 67 songs. That's fantastic. Until you consider that his post-Beatle career at this point was 46 years, and it's a guy that puts something out, you know, almost every year, whether it's a live album, you know, a side project like a classical thing, a full rock album, or a single. Rarely does a year go by without Paul putting something out. And trying to cover 46 years and 67 songs, I just don't think gives it nearly enough real estate, no matter which 67 songs it was going to be.
But shouldn't the quality of the songs be the criteria rather than the number of songs?
Absolutely, it should. But I think when we look at the Mount Rushmore of rock, Richard and Rob, you know, I know who's on mine. It's Dylan and it's Springsteen and it's certainly all the Beatles. In 46 years, I would contend that he's had a consistent... Well, it's always been at least, I think, consistently good. He's had a couple of, you know, a couple of albums that I put as my least favorites, like everyone else. But that actually is one of the weaknesses in the 67 song selection. So without any chronology or chart history or any other criteria to put this together, I would certainly say he has more than 67 good songs in those 46 years. So the first thing I did, without regard to chronology or chart history or anything else, is I printed out a list, which is you can find on the internet anywhere you look, of a list of all the song titles that Paul has put out in those 46 years, and they numbered just over 500. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And said, and that doesn't count, you know, the live version of this, the remix version of that, the 12-inch single version of this, the whatever,
right,
the single edits. We're talking about 500 titles. Okay, 67 songs over a 46-year period, you know, trying to come up with a representative sampling of his career, again, I just think right out of the chute, this thing was going to shoot itself in the foot, that it couldn't possibly be complete enough for probably the listeners of this show, certainly not deep enough for the folks we see at Beatle Fest. We said, all right, maybe the audience is somebody different. Maybe it's the, you know, the kind of newbie or next generation fan or somebody who's just discovering Paul's post-Beatles work. And, you know, where do you start? Okay, so Wings Greatest might be too light. It only covered, you know, 8 years or so, and it was a dozen tracks or something. All the Best, couple different configurations, either side of 15 or 16 songs. Wingspan, which was a nice healthy dose. But here you got four discs, okay? Mm-hmm. And four discs of McCartney. I ran through that list of 500 songs without regard to keeping score and just said yes, no, yes, no, yes, 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 no, 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 and said, what would I want to put on there? And I came up with, just in a first unofficial, unscientific pass, came up with 135 songs I think would be a great representative box set. And by the way, playing in that playing field meant nothing unreleased, nothing new, just out of the released catalog. And I came up with 135 and said, you know what? That's probably going to be too much. That's probably a seven-disc set, and just not sure there's, you know, anybody who's going to be buying that, except for the, you know, only the most devout.
Richard, yes. You want to weigh in here on this?
Well, you know, in my case, I think a one-disc set would be sufficient.
Well, I would dispute that, because it would start and end with the first, you know, dozen tracks from Tug of War. I mean, so we're, you know, we've already eaten up half that disc.
That'd be more than enough for me. But okay, what I wanted to ask you is, are these all tracks that you like, or are there some on there that are not particularly favorites of yours, but you feel that, you know, there's sufficient demand for them that
they're
should be included?
Yeah, I think where I went with it was a nice mix of, certainly all the chart hits would have to be in there, because you remember, he's, for 46 years, he's only been anthologized three times prior to this. Mm-hmm. There really isn't a great retrospective on him to this day. There really isn't one that, you know, that sufficiently covers his post-Beatles career. So the 135 was clearly a mix of hits. Certainly, you know, all the hits were in there. And a good dose of favorites, for sure, and for that matter, some that Paul has cited as favorites, like, you know, Daytime, Nighttime Suffering and things like that.
Yes.
I did not put the whole Tug of War album in there, just as a point of, just to be on the record here, and for anyone that might care to know, that is my favorite Paul album. There is a sampling from that album. There's in the list of the 100 that I whittled this thing down to. There's a good sampling from Tug of War. There's similarly a good sampling from Band on the Run and Ram, of, you know, Paul's albums that have really held up best. And that led me to do a comparison with the track list that was announced. And for purposes of this discussion and show, guys, I guess we'll talk about the, you know, the 67 song four disc one, not the, you know, the single or double disc versions that came out.
Right. I think that's essential, because your compilation was made as a reaction to the sanctioned release. And as you point out in your accompanying article, it seems like there were some political decisions made in the weighing of X amount of songs per certain albums versus other albums.
Yeah, what really struck me, and again, I'm not such an accountant that there has to be the same number from each album. Certainly, you know, albums that had more hits and were better received and frankly just, you know, had better songs like Band on the Run and perhaps Tug of War and Ram. These are, you know, some of his stronger records. Mm-hmm. Didn't necessarily have to have more than, let's just pick another McCartney album out of it, had Venus and Mars, but it just would tend to work out that way.
I would make the case, if it was me doing the picking, that certainly for the strongest albums, I might err on the side of underrepresentation, simply because I would want them, as the artist and or creator, I would want listeners to experience the album in its entirety and just choose a few representative tracks rather than milk it dry of every good tune on there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that is a good point. But what will happen is they still have to sell copies of this. And I'm just not sure how many, you know, of the non-diehards are going to look at a Paul McCartney four-disc box set and say, wait a minute, it doesn't have Jet and Band on the Run? What am I buying here?
Right.
You know, the robust, the fest, the Beatle Fest attendees, you know, we're not going to be that discriminating if it leaves off one or two. But what really kind of bothered me was, you know, I bumped my, you know, my wish list up against what was on the 67 tracker, and then did a little bit of analysis. Again, the accountant in me did that and said, how many from each album? And it was so disproportionate. And one of them, just to this day, with every passing day, makes less and less sense in terms of a sound decision, and that's Flowers in the Dirt. Mm-hmm. Now, the initial, you know, party line was, well, that's going to be the next one in the deluxe archive series, so we didn't want to go jumping in there. Mm. Well, that's pretty ridiculous, because here we are 9 months later. Flowers in the Dirt is going to be coming out in a few months in the deluxe archive series. But what does that mean for this nine-month-old box set? What does that mean for that? And a year from now, what will it mean to that box
set? Well, but that's the thing. You see, for me, I'd be thinking, I mean, as everyone knows, I'm not the biggest fan of McCartney's post-Beatles career. But I would be looking to put together a collection of tracks that, in years to come, if this is the collection that people are listening to even in 100 years, that it really adds to Paul's legacy. So I'd be even, you know, okay, I'm not the biggest fan, so tracks that I might consider to be kind of mediocre that others don't, that's fine. But there are some selections, including even in your compilation, that I personally would take exception, because I think they detract from his legacy rather than add to it.
Such as,
okay, half a dozen that I noted down here. Mary Had a Little Lamb. I know it was a big hit, but I'm talking about artistically. Mary Had a Little Lamb. The Girl Is Mine, which is really a Michael Jackson song.
I played a little bit with the technical rules there. The single is credited to both of them. Mm. Sure, it was on a Michael Jackson album as opposed to a Paul album, but point well taken.
Yeah. Spies Like Us, Once Upon a Long Ago, Freedom and Wonderful Christmas Time. Those, for me, all detract from the legacy in an artistic sense.
Well, you know, again, doing this purely artistically, I would come up with a different list of 100 for sure. Mm-hmm. What I tried to do here was make this, as I said, not only hits, and that's why Mary Had a Little Lamb comes on there. So, yes. You know, you raised the issue a couple minutes back, Richard, about are there any that I think I would take off from a pure artistic point of view? Yeah, Mary Had a Little Lamb would come off.
Mm-hmm. Right. C-Mode is a song that I think, for me, it's always mystified me why he pushes that song so hard when it's not even A material. And that's just my opinion. I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm the one out of step with the fandom on this, but I never understood why he still plays that song live.
Yeah. Well, some of the others that Richard, that you mentioned, Spies Like Us, I put on there actually with good reason. Up till, well, one, I happen to like it as a 3 minute single.
Huh?
Not the 8 minute, you know, 12 inch thing with Chevy Chase's, you know, movie clips over it and everything else. But I thought it was an okay single and some good guitar playing. But up until this recent rendezvous with Rihanna, it stood as his last visit to the top 10 in America. And it kind of at least closed the period or you know, bookended the period of his, let's call it his, at least for Americans, his hit-making era.
Don't do a thing by the
That song has never been on a McCartney anthology. Okay, it was never on an album, certainly. Okay, not part of any album. It was a bonus cut on one of the reissues back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. But it didn't make it onto the 1987 All the Best. It didn't make it onto Wingspan in 2001. At some point, his last trip to the top 10 is now would seem to be lost to the ages. So that one, that was a conscious decision to keep that one in there.
Wait, okay, makes complete sense.
What about Once Upon a Long Ago, Freedom, and Wonderful Christmas Time?
Okay, Wonderful Christmas Time, you know, it's you know, in the same school as Ebony and Ivory. There doesn't seem to be people that can take it or leave it. They really either have an affection for it or they don't. Again, one, if we stick just to charts, well, it was a top 10 single over there in England. Okay. Second.
So was Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny Yellow Polka Dot Bikini,
okay, which is also compiled.
Okay. So if you were making a Brian Hyland box set, would that be on there or not? I mean, no, seriously, you know, again, some went in there. You know, again, what I'm trying to get at is I tried to make this certainly have all the hits. So
there's no way you compile McCartney and don't have that song in there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, in
really?
The last month,
yeah.
You know,
I'm not a fan of it.
Unless you got in between the radio and Richard, you know, how many times did that thing come on your radio in the last month? It's
too many.
Well, that's the point. A lot of people still have an affinity for it. I happen to like it. I happen to like it without all the effects. Like when he did it on Saturday Night Live, I guess back in, what was it, 2012?
Yes.
I happened to be at the concert at the Apollo back in 2010, which I think is the only time he ever played it live in America. Mm. And without all the electronics, it's actually a pretty cool little song.
Yeah, you'd made that point, and it's funny. When I was reading that, I was thinking to myself, when he did that demo to Ebony and Ivory, where it's just him and it's very stripped down and just him at the keyboard, that is far and away the most listenable version of that song I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it's – I guess we can use a broad brush and say – the hook or the gimmick or the catch, whatever, Ebony, Ivory, Stevie, Paul, yeah, we get it. but that, actually that one, think back to the performance he did of that, was at the White House show again,
yes.
Probably 2012 or 13,
mm-hmm.
Maybe. I thought that was real enjoyable without the, you know, the electronic, you know, effects on the keyboard and stuff, you know. I love Stevie Wonder, certainly, you know, Paul's worked with lesser people than him. So I thought that was actually pretty cool there, but I didn't want to make the set or the proposed set so esoteric that I would say, okay, we have to have Ebony and Ivory on there because that was his biggest hit.
Yes.
Not just a hit, his biggest hit. You can't do a career retrospective without the biggest hit, in my opinion.
Now, I agree.
What about the anthem that never was, Freedom? Based on the melody of If I Had a Hammer.
Not All My Trials.
Yeah. Freedom I put on there because it was just a moment. There wasn't terribly much from Driving Rain. In fact, I don't think I had anything else from Driving Rain. Maybe I had
Lover to a Friend.
Lover to a Friend.
Yeah.
Freedom was kind of an anomaly in his catalog. The initial packaging, you remember, didn't even list it. They
had to
recut it with the slipcase and the whole bit.
Yeah.
I happen to have been at, you know, here in the New York area, I get to a lot of some of the bigger moments. I happen to be at the concert for New York. I'm not sure I would have pulled, you know, I don't know, the live version of Lonely Road or something from there. But I wanted to have something from the, you know, the 9/11 benefit.
Mm.
You know, and by the way, big old asterisk to fit it on that disc. Much to Richard's delight, you would have to use the 2 minute 11 second or 2 minute 30 second edit. Okay, so I'm trying for you, Richard.
I really appreciate it.
Okay.
Just as an aside, if I think I could easily put together a 100 song set of Essential McCartney for anybody who doesn't want to buy every single album. I think I could do that easily. You know, and Richard smirks because he thinks I'm insane. But I think what I would do, it just as a presentation difference, because you've got yours pretty much chronological, is I would put together one disc of just the hits maybe two if it warrants. I don't know timing-wise how it works out. And then one of B-side slash, you know, esoteric material like that was for soundtracks.
It'll be arranged thematically, sure.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's how I would do it. And that way people, you know, could, you know, pick and choose what they want to purchase and have the deluxe set be everything complete with a few bonuses thrown in.
In all seriousness, what about, you know, Fireman, Standing Stone,
that would be my
Liverpool
excuse.
Oratorio.
There'd be a disc of the esoteric stuff, a sampling. Mm. Because really, I would look to my compilation would be something to get people interested enough that they'd want to look into other stuff. I mean, you didn't have it on here, but one of the things I was thinking of is I'm partial to your Abracadabra. There's always that weird one-off stuff that he does, you know, for various, you know, compilations that aren't issued under the McCartney name. You know what I mean?
Right, soundtracks, things like that. Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm something I would maybe do to make this a bit different from the other compilations is to maybe have some of the classical music as a sort of thread running through, you know, as a link between tracks, maybe.
Yeah, Sitting Stone.
That's an interesting idea, for sure. With the 100 that I put together, it filled out 5 discs, not 4, which, you know, led to, you know, upon further review, as they say in the NFL, looking at not the, to this point, we've pretty much talked about what's not on it that should be on it. Looking at what actually came out and saying, well, what is on it? And
you're talking Pure McCartney or your compilation?
I'm Pure McCartney.
Yes.
Basically to say, you know, sitting here high and mighty in the Tom Frangione studio right now, I could say, and these shall be the 100 that define his career. Mm. Got some interesting and largely constructive feedback on the piece, which will be linked on the website here that you can go look over it track by track. A lot of people said, wow, what a great collection. You know what, though? I'd take out Mary Had a Little Lamb and I'd put in, I don't know, I'm just making up, just picking one out of the sky. I'd put on, Little Lamb Dragonfly or something.
Yes.
And, you know, of course, stating the obvious, no two McCartney fans would pick the same 100.
No.
It's mathematically just, you know, impossible.
Do you have any concerns about his vocals in recent years and putting that on there and having it stand out when it's juxtaposed against his earlier performances?
Well, I do, Richard, particularly in a live setting. So I was fortunate enough to go to the pre-Saturday Night Live Valentine's Day show in New York, the fan club show, and he sounded great. And that's not just my sympathetic ears, you know, telling you that. You can go find the clips on YouTube and stuff. The show there at Irving Plaza in New York was absolutely killer. The next night, you know, when he appeared on the Saturday Night Live 40th anniversary, I think we'd all agree was not his finest hour. At his age, it seems that, you know, two nights in a row is difficult for him live. I had the pleasure of seeing him this past summer. It was the first show after, I think, a two-week hiatus. And, again, sounded real good and not just sympathetic ears. I've got a recording of the show, and he sounded really good.
But you know something? Even in interviews, his speaking voice sounds old.
He's starting to sound like a 75-year-old Englishman at this point.
There you go.
He really is. And I've heard some of the shows from the recent tours where if it's, you know, the night after a previous concert or even two nights after, it gets really rough for him, particularly continuing to do vocally demanding songs like Maybe I'm Amazed without changing key.
Right.
So Ringo, you know, he took care of that first tour out. He said, well, I can't sing whatever. It don't come easy in its original key.
Right.
Let's lower it at least. You know, I'll sound like I'm singing down here, but at least he's in key largely.
Yes.
You know, Paul is probably doing some damage to his vocal cords trying to do Maybe I'm Amazed in its original key and doing it, you know, somewhat frequently. And that has hurt him. Even now, some of his clean studio recordings, the recent track from the Ernest and Ethel soundtrack, or even I Want to Come Home from that movie. To your point, he's sounding older. Guess what? You know, like they said in that other gem, Revolution 9, everybody got a little bit older and a little bit slower. And that's what's happening.
And a lot creakier.
What would you say? I mean, putting together a 5-disc set, and as you said, you're sort of going through all the tracks, the 500-odd tracks, and you're saying, yep, no. Would you sort of see it as also telling a story about his post-Beatles career in terms of what the arc of his career has been? What would you say that has been?
Are you saying like what was his, you know, his best period? Or well, I'm not sure I follow your question.
The arc of the entirety of his career? Is
yes,
that what you're asking?
Post-Beatles, yes.
Yeah, I mean, okay, there's other artists you can point to, like a Bob Dylan or Paul Simon or somebody like that, where you can sort of see the evolution, as
yes,
it were, of
yes,
their artistry. Is there a particular pattern you discern with Paul?
Actually, no. That's something, you know, certainly from a hit-making perspective and a general mass appeal, obviously you have to look at the 70s, you know, the period right after the Beatles. I think he made at least one great album in each of the ensuing decades. Certainly in the 80s, Tug of War, I still think is the best record he's made since he left the Beatles. In the 70s, clearly, you know, Honors could be going to Band on the Run and or Ram. In the 90s, Flaming Pie. In the new century, maybe not as much, but I like
Chaos.
I love Chaos. To me, Chaos was a great return to form for him. Mm-hmm. Very organic. I think that's his best record, you know, since 2000.
Yeah, I agree.
If you look, you know, there are some, he's also made some pretty bad records in that time. I didn't think Driving Rain had a single melody on it. there were no harmonies other than that little instrumental Heather thing. There are no harmonies, and that's a hallmark of a good McCartney record, vocal harmony. You know, that was my least favorite Paul record probably since Wildlife. You know, it just was. It's not a record. It's not a go-to record for me, for sure. Chaos, absolutely a go-to record. To a lesser extent, Memory Almost Full. I thought Memory Almost Full had some really, really strong songs, but had a few that were, yeah, they could have been by anybody. They could have been by Richard Buskin, for all.
What'd you think of New? How would you rank that among the 21st century releases?
Liked it. There are a few real strong songs in there, and those are the ones I included on my own compilation. Certainly early days, I thought it gave me the idea. You guys watching this sound breaking thing?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All I can think when I hear early days is, why doesn't Paul get Rick Rubin to sit with him just for a little while? It would be so good. I think he needs somebody who can, produce him for what he is now.
Yes.
You didn't include Cut Me Some Slack, did you?
No.
No, I did not.
Now, why not? Because I have to say, that's one of his recent tracks that I actually liked.
Yeah, I kind of didn't, and I know this is a terrible argument because of the Girl Is Mine thing, but Girl Is Mine had a chart presence, whatever. I didn't really consider it a McCartney catalog piece.
Hmm.
If I extended the framework was within which I was working, and to be anything he ever put a fingerprint on, yeah, I'd put that on there.
I'm going to come clean here and make an admission that since we did the show on Run Devil Run and John Lennon's rock and roll album, I've listened several times to Run Devil Run, and I've actually got a new appreciation for that album. I think it's one of the most consistent records that he's done in the last 40 years. I really, not just the choice of tracks, but also his vocal performances, I think, are superb. I love the arrangements. I've really come to like that album.
I think I made the case on that show that, this was him coming off the heels of Linda's death.
Mm.
And I think it was a sort of therapeutic exercise for him to get back to his rock and roll roots.
Yeah.
And I think that he's, like I said, he's never at his best than when he has a personal, emotional investment in what he's singing.
Right.
And I think he did in that case.
Yeah, especially, I agree with you.
Lonesome Town, which I think is a favorite song of hers.
Yes.
And No Other Baby.
Right.
I mean, it gives me chills when I listen
to it. Yeah, his vocal performances, even, you see the film of him at the Cavern,
mm-hmm.
Performing those tracks. Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, I think I picked, I don't have my full list in front of me, shame on me, but I think I picked I Got Stung, because I thought he just sang terrific on that.
His
phrasing was great. He was hitting all the high stuff without screaming. He really put forth a great vocal performance on that one.
Holy smokes, land sakes alive, I never thought this would happen to me. Yeah.
I have always enjoyed that album, and one of the ones I like best wouldn't come within a mile of this collection, but it's the Carl Perkins, the Movie Mag. I just love how he does that. I mean, it just reminds me more of Carl than it does of Paul.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had to, you know, just choose, whatever, 5 or 10 favorite McCartney tracks, ones that just come to mind now, what are the ones that immediately jump out?
Personal favorites?
Yes.
Okay. I would start with Wanderlust.
Oh, Look, there you go. Wow. You and me both.
All right. Look, a half hour in, we agree on something.
Absolutely.
At the bullseye. There you go.
Love that
Wanderlust track. Wanderlust is a bullseye. And I mean,
yeah.
You know, that Art of McCartney record that came out a year or two ago when Brian Wilson did it.
Yeah.
When I listened to that, it's one of my favorites on that collection. I said, you know, a great song is a great song. Is a great song.
Well, you see, for me, he hits it out of the park because it's a great melody. For once, for me, really meaningful lyrics and a great vocal performance. It's just beautiful.
From the same album, of course, I'd put Here Today.
Yes.
In there.
Yep.
And I, you know, I mean, again, personal favorites, I could start and end with, you know, many, many tracks on Tug of War, but for certain, you know, just in the interest of giving a little bit of a tour through the catalog, I'll limit Tug of War to two. From Flaming Pie, I love Calico Skies.
Mm-hmm.
From Chaos and Creation, I love How Kind of You. I love This Never Happened Before. It's just real gentle songs. Loved those. Certainly Backseat of My Car from Ram would be on that list.
Yeah,
I do. You know, is it too easy to say maybe I'm amazed? Probably.
The hard part is which version.
No, for me, actually, it's not. As great as a record as, you know, came out on the first Apple album, mm-hmm. for me, the Wings single is a near-perfect record. You know, what's kind of interesting? I mentioned a few minutes ago, you know, some of the things that had never been on a McCartney best of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was talking to a radio guy at Sirius today, and I said, Lou, I'm doing this show tonight, and let me just, you know, give me a gut check on something. What would you say is, across all formats, probably the McCartney song that gets the most airplay these days? And he said, that would probably be the live version of Maybe I'm Amazed. I said, good. So it's not just me thinking that.
Wow, it was very interesting.
It was never on a McCartney compilation. Hmm. It stands as never having been on a McCartney compilation. It wasn't on the 78 Greatest Hits. Interestingly, on Wingspan in 2001, they did use the, you know, the studio version, but the radio special that went out from whoever, MJI or whoever, sent out the
Wings live version.
Yeah, the Wings live version was on there, saying, you know, from Wingspan, you heard this, that, and the other thing, and Maybe I'm Amazed. So that may have been a last minute, you know, swap out, either on the EMI side or over on the radio side. I don't know. But the live version was used there, and, you know, it was the hit. Certainly you hear the studio version, you know, enough. But that live version of Maybe I'm Amazed, it has never been on a McCartney retrospective. That's criminal.
That's nuts. But in my fantasy compiling of McCartney, yeah. I could see putting out the studio version to where it trails off and then coming back in with the live coda. You know what I'm saying?
Well, let me ask you this, Rob. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In 2001, when they did Wingspan, you got the ballad version of No More Lonely Nights and the dance mix of No More Lonely Nights.
Yes.
That one we had to get twice.
Yes.
If there's any McCartney record that needs to be on a collection twice, it's Maybe I'm Amazed.
Agreed.
The definitive, you know, Apple album version. And the hit Wings Over America version.
Yes.
You know,
because they're separate performances. I mean, you know, you've got the differences between them, but mostly the live one, because, you know, it is a different read of it by the slower tempo, but also by virtue of that coda that was not on the original version. That is like another piece of the song. I mean, that, to me, that is a major thing to experience when Paul is doing a reading of that. And it needs to be commemorated. It's not an afterthought. It's something that he actually, you know, put together.
Oh,
how mad would Richard have been if I had put on the version from the Twin Freaks album, which, by the way, is really, really good. The remix of Maybe I'm Amazed on Twin Freaks.
Okay.
Go back and revisit that one. That's a kind of a little hidden gem there. Looking back at Pure, the Beatle fandom, you know, responded with some things that were, you know, clearly under the heading of picking nits, and some things that were legitimate, and valid points. Mm-hmm. So you're buying four CDs. I'll go through a couple of them. You get a four CD set, and most of the discs are running somewhere between 55 and 60 minutes. You have an hour of unused capacity in there.
Right.
And to Richard, to your point, more is not always better.
No.
Okay. So should we have had maybe a great three disc set? Maybe. But having to buy four discs and having them, weigh in kind of short, left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. There's no hard and fast law that says that a retrospective has to be chronological.
No.
But common sense would tell you that you don't have a song that contains the reprise of Band on the Run show up before Band on the Run. It's ridiculous.
Right.
So you get 1985 well before you get Band on the Run, and it's ridiculous as a listening experience to have that reprise in there before the main title itself. The imbalance, as I said, New, which had some really nice songs on there. I'm not sure it should have the same representation as Ram and Band on the Run. Flaming Pie, as much as I love that album, is there a reason that eight of its whatever, however many it has, 12 or 13 songs, you're getting better than half of the Flaming Pie album? By the way, good songs all, but to take up eight out of 67 slots from Flaming Pie just makes it very imbalanced. And the counter argument from the Paul camp and from Paul himself is this is just a mixtape that I would make. And well, yeah, that week Flaming Pie was your favorite album, Paul. Right. We get it. But for something that's going to stand in record collections and radio station archives and collector's sets and serve as, a somewhat, go-to retrospective, it really falls short. The absence of anything from Flowers in the Dirt, which was a number one album in England.
Right.
I mean, that's a big record over there to completely overlook and for no good reason.
Yeah, that's a purely commercial decision, isn't it? It's not an artistic.
Well, I think it's a terrible commercial decision because a year from now, or even right now, why would you go buy Pure as a McCartney retrospective and say, well, Flowers in the Dirt is coming out? Well, not everyone's going to buy the deluxe edition of Flowers in the Dirt. So, to get whatever this one and My Brave Face or something and put it there would have been probably a wise decision. Some of the decisions that were made over there at Concord when it came to marketing him leave me scratching my head more than I probably should. The new album. I'm not sure I can think of a worse title for an album than New.
Kisses on the Bottom?
Well, Kisses on the Bottom kind of had a little, there's a little, play on words there from one of the lyrics in the song.
Well, New is Orwellian.
But New is when you go to type in a year from now, or if today you said, what the hell's the name of Paul's new album? Let me go type in new Paul McCartney album.
Well, didn't Cheap Trick do the same thing with Latest or something like that?
Yeah, it's insane.
It's stupid. I did notice that in your, speaking of Flowers in the Dirt, that you didn't put Figure of Eight in there. When there is that single version, which is a separate thing from the album version.
I can assure you it was in the list of 135.
Okay. I also noticed you omitted Bebop.
Okay. You may notice that for all the discussions I've made about balance and representing everything, there is precisely one Paul McCartney album that is not represented in that list of 100.
Wings Wildlife.
That would be it.
Whoa.
That's, to me, it's the low point of his career. To me, it sounds out of time, out of tune, out of place. It just, it's not a record I ever go to, ever.
Not even anything. A Dear Friend?
Especially for Dear Friend and Bebop and Mumbo and all the rest of them.
Tomorrow?
No, even Tomorrow. Yeah, I got one of those samplers. It was called the Paul McCartney Collection. One song from every album when they did the 1993 remasters in England. And when I got to that, it sounded so weak compared to anything else that they used in that sampler. I said, this sounds like it's amateurish.
Talking about Flowers in the Dirt and the notable omissions, it kind of echoes Paul's attitude to some of his recent material when he tours. I noticed that, you know, he'll promote a new album, but then the preceding album, he mostly performed nothing from that.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, what does that say, that he doesn't rate his own work? You know, it's a really weird decision, that.
Yeah, it's a good point, Richard. At some point, you know, he has taken as a whole an embarrassingly deep catalog. And remember, beyond the 46 years of making records after he left the Beatles, let's all call it what it is, there are a lot of Beatle fans out there who go see him in concert and want to hear Beatles songs. I actually asked him that question many, many years ago at a press conference, saying, gee, Paul, you know, on the first tour, you really covered the Beatles stuff and revisited nicely, and you did a few from Flowers in the Dirt. And, you know, remember that first, call it the comeback tour there in 89. I said, you really, you know, seem to overlook that middle period, Wings, which, you know, aside from the biggies, Band on the Run, Live and Let Die, and Jet, you really kind of overlook that. And, you know, what's that all about? And he basically it was like Jeopardy. He answered the question by rewording it. He said, well, you know, a lot of people come to hear the Beatles songs and you always want to do the new stuff because it's fresh. And sometimes stuff in the middle gets left out. Thanks. Feel like I was there. And, you know, it was weird because in interviews, at least at that time, and I know he picks different songs along the way, but I remember at the time, and I actually interjected this after his response, because he said, there's always folks like you who say, hey, man, why don't you do something from Ram? And people start applauding, and it's kind of cool. And I said, or Daytime, Nighttime Suffering. And he goes, yeah, that's another one. That one in many interviews, you know, people would ask him, gee, Paul, what's a song of yours that, you know, you wish more people knew? And he would consistently answer Daytime, Nighttime Suffering. Well, I got an idea. How about when you go out to the masses, you play it? I got an idea when you do a 67-song retrospective. Put it in there.
At least it was on Wingspan.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
So let me ask you this. I mean, we've played Wanderlust on this show before, but what track, what one of the sort of maybe lesser-known tracks would you suggest that we play out this show with?
From Tug of War or from anywhere?
From anywhere. Anywhere. That if you, you know, we're going to close the show with, we're actually starting it with Put It There. Because
Very nice.
Flowers in the Dirt. And so for a memorable track, what would you play out with?
Would it have to be one of the 100 that's on my list?
Could be anything.
Anything.
Okay.
Memorable in a good way.
Okay. Yes. All right. Very good. I'm going to go with Daytime, Nighttime Suffering.
Very good. This has been Robert Rodriguez.
This is Richard Buskin.
And you've been listening to
Something About the Beatles.
What does she get for all the love she gave you? They're on the ladder of regret.
Mighty river, give her all she gave. She get for all the love she gave you. They're on the ladder of regret.
Daytime, nighttime suffering
is all she gets. Where are the prizes for the game she entered with little chance of much success?
Something About the Beatles, produced at Studio Media Recording, engineered by Scott Steinman, executive producer Rick Way. Title song by The Corgis.
Something about the Beatles.
Okay, many songwriters talk about songs being like their children, Sammy, to apply the same logic to the songs. Which yeah. Can it come down to the best song that you've ever written, your favourite song?
I mean, I get asked that question, and I always would say, oh, I don't know, you know, they're like babies and you can't have a favourite. And then I got fed up with saying that, so I said Here, There and Everywhere, just because I think it's quite a complete little song. I also think Yesterday is special. Yesterday's special because I dreamed it, and so that doesn't happen, you know. So that kind of like arrived onto me. So I have to feel something sort of special about that. Yeah. But, you know, then I'll kind of change, and I'll sometimes I say, why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we?
You could do that one a cappella.
No one will be watching us. Why don't we do it in the road?
Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road? No one will be watching us. Why don't we do it in the road?
Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road? Yeah, why don't we do it in the road? No one will be watching us. Why don't we do it in the road?
Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road?
No one will be watching us. Why don't we do it in the road?
Why don't we do it in the road? Road. Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road? People won't be watching us. Why don't we do it in the road?
Why don't we do it in the road?
What do you think of all that? Do you think I could do it better? Yeah.